everybody. Welcome. Do not adjust your set. Yes, it is another brand new episode of the Press Row Podcast, and we are here today to take a look ahead and preview to a degree that, you know, that we would be able to preview things. Preview the year 2023 in sports video games, and with us, we have two fantastic people that you know very well. One of them, of course, is the famous, infamous, maybe a little bit of both, Pasta Padre, a.k.a. Mr. Brian Wiedeye, the man who did not appear on the review show because he just was so angry. Brian, how are you, my friend?
I'm trying to simmer down. It's 2023. New Year's resolution is to temper my anger, yes. But no, yeah, 2023, same crap as 2022, isn't it? This is where we're at now. And but we can look forward. Maybe things will change. Maybe things will get better. Always got to keep some hope. And, you know, that's the new me. As I said, I'm working on myself.
Always keeping the hope, Brian. It's what it's what you have to do. It's what you have to do. And another one of our absolute favorite people, the great Chris Jardine, a.k.a. Snaggle J, a.k.a. Colonel Canada. Chris, you have more nicknames than I do jobs, and that's saying a lot. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. I mean, listen, first of all, two appearances in less than a three-year span, I think, goes for – you know what? Listen, for me, Rich, it's always the – you're always so positive in the introduction. I mean, I could just leave now and have my mission for this podcast fulfilled. But you know what? It's funny. I kind of echo a lot of what Brian is saying. You know what? I have major concerns that, you know, 2023 is going to be a lot of the same crap as 2022. You know, I'm embracing the whole new year, new me. But man, it's been, you know, as we record this, 9 days of just the never ending world that we live in right now. But I'm excited to talk. Listen, there's some really good things that I think we're going to talk about in this episode, and maybe by the end of it we'll swing ourselves right around to 2023 being a banner year for sports video games.
Well, I was going to say you do open us up optimistically, and it's our job to bring us back down to reality.
Exactly.
That's what we're here for, is to counterbalance Rich a little bit.
You know, it's so interesting. I don't know. Well, I mean, obviously, the answer is both, right? But I feel like a couple of things have happened. Number one, I think in a lot of ways, I have changed with my relationship with sports video games. And I don't mean in a negative way or a positive way. Just it's changed in that because of where I am in life and what I do in life, I don't play them as much as, or with nearly as much breadth as I did in the past. But I also feel like at the same time, what I do play is almost universally enjoyable. But that's because I really curate my experience. But above those two things, what it really feels like to me, and I'm not saying this is a factual statement. What I'm saying is what I feel sort of emotionally when it comes to sports video games is that while in a lot of ways very proficient, I feel like there is a lot more where the sports video games of our current era are just a lot more I'm even struggling for the word, but they all sort of almost exist in almost like a common pool, as opposed to 10 years ago and 20 years ago, you know, a lot of different titles. And I'm not talking about, you know, 5-6 versions of a baseball or football game, but I felt like titles had a lot more personality and a lot more differentiators than they do today. And again, I'm not saying it's good or it's bad, but it's just very, very, it's a different vibe in the sports video game world. Brian, can you make any sense of what I'm saying? And do you agree or do you disagree? And either is fine, of course.
No, I think you nailed part of it. And yes, it does. The genre as a whole feels pretty vanilla right now because you've got games built in essentially the same way. They're all built to monetize in the same way. They all have similar legacy type modes and features that have continued to carry over and have melded with the monetized modes that have become the biggest thing now. And yes, we only have a handful of sports, at least a handful of big licensed sports games compared to the past. We also don't have the arcade versions of those sports for the most part. So you can buy an NBA 2K and you can get almost every type of experience out of that, including the arcade type of thing. But again, that's just part of something bigger. It's not its own experience. And I think when, you know, growing up for us and over the years, it was experience thing, those things in different ways, in isolated ways. And then, of course, online play coming in and bringing in kind of community to those things. And now it's just, you know, does anyone really anticipate new features for sports games being announced? It doesn't. Yeah, I remember back 10, 15, 20 years ago, where it was the biggest thing you could imagine was, you know, EA just released news on this new feature, or 2K is bringing this to NBA 2K. That just doesn't exist anymore. It's what cards are you going to have in the Ultimate Team mode? It's have you done anything to franchise mode? Is the other big question we get now. And so it's approaching games in a way that we're really not surprised by them anymore, I don't think. And they're so iterative, even more than in the past. The whole sports games are just a roster update thing. That was never true in the past. It's kind of rolled into that now, where it starts to feel more like it. The games just, you don't get that big jump from one year to the next. You don't even get the big jump from one console generation to the next anymore. So it's I think just drained of the excitement. Obviously, there's still millions of people who play the games and millions upon millions of dollars being spent in them. But the way they're anticipated and the way they're approached by consumers is very different now than it used to be.
Yeah, there is some similarity though. Two, in that if you look at every single year, you know, half of the most popular games in the NPD and the sales charts, half of them are sports games, right? Every single year you can count on NBA 2K, Madden, MLB The Show,
FIFA,
and FIFA, right? Yep. Like automatically. And then there's usually a fifth or a sixth one. Sometimes it's NHL, you know, sometimes it's maybe, you know, in a year like last year where a Gran Turismo might show up, although that's, you know, platform specific. So I think part of what you are relaying, Brian, is simply because of who you are, right? And how old you are. And I don't mean that disparagingly, because I'm, you know, older than you are, right? Like when you've been around the block 25 plus times, it's very mm-hmm. different. Then if you've only been around the block a couple, two or three times, people are still playing and enjoying sports video games and spending money on them. And I am one of them. I think, Chris, another thing that sort of, I'm not confused by it, right? If anything, I understand it very well. But I think another thing that sort of plays into sort of a more of a feeling of, instead of big launches, almost just like a steady current of stuff, is the fact that a lot of sports video games now, there's not one version of them, right? There's multiple versions, right? There's the early access one. There's the launch one. There's a launch one special edition. There's three or four versions of a lot of the games.
You've got trials.
Well, I was just going to say, right? Yeah. I was just going to say it. Plus, a lot of them now, if you can play a significant amount via a subscription, right? Like I play, right now I'm playing the new Need for Speed. You know, I'm not 10 hours in, right? I'm like 3 or 4 hours into that, right? I played FIFA and NHL through the trials, right? So, like, there's also just a very different way that people can get access to these games. There's different versions that come out in very different ways. Chris, does that sort of play into this feeling, or are you feeling completely differently? I'm curious what you're thinking about how we get these games and the different types of versions and the way they come out and the way that consumers can experience them in different ways.
Well, and I think the sum of all the parts of that is, you know, and this is not just limited to sports gaming, but it's the best example. It is so financially driven, more so than it has ever been. And there's a lot of factors to that. I think a lot of it is, you know, there's more money being spent on games now than there was 20 years ago, probably because the price of the games are double now than they were 20 years ago. Accessibility is huge. I mean, you have people who spend hundreds of dollars on mobile games. You know, I think the biggest problem is when you look at, for example, you take a game and you say, hey, listen, there's the MVP edition, there's the digital deluxe edition, there's the standard edition. A whole existence of those, yes, they'll say, well, this one you get 3 days early access, but that's not the hook. The hook is the funnel. And every one of these games is funneling people towards monetization. I'm sure at some point in this episode we're going to talk specifically about the show, but they've almost mastered funneling you towards Diamond Dynasty. You play every mode in the game you play gives you some sort of progress towards Diamond Dynasty. And it's like, well, you know, I'm sure there's a conversion rate that they look at and they say, listen, if we get like 15% of those people to even jump in and give it a try and spend $10 when stubs are on sale, well, think of all the money we're going to make. And I think that's where a lot of this sort of, like, a lot of the people that I talk to regularly about sports gaming and the landscape, they're just kind of blah about what's to come. Everybody's just kind of complacent now because we know in March we're going to get the show and it's going to be pretty much the same game as 22 with a couple of lipstick on a pig features, I like to call them, they're going to dedicate entire streams to them. But for the more hardcore people like us who have wanted franchise updates for 8 years, we're going to see through that. Go ahead, Rich.
Well, no, I was just going to say, MLB The Show, like, it's, you know, it's going to be really good because it's right. been really good for a long time.
Right. But I think, again, right, to the point that we're discussing, you know, Brian made mention of, we have not, you know, seen a whole lot of advancements with this generation. MLB The Show 22 was essentially the same game as MLB The Show 19. On the last generation, it, you know, yes, the visuals are a little crisper. Yes, the hitting engine has been revamped slightly, but essentially on the field, it's the same game. There's been little advancements here and there. I think the problem we run into is that for better or for worse, the big sports games that we have are incremental upgrades.
But okay.
Yes. And I think it's, for someone like me who plays MLB The Show for 600-700 hours a year, I like, literally, it's January 9th. I was playing it today.
Sure.
But it's difficult for me to get out of my chair excited when they start dropping news, because it's like, hey, is their road to release going to be featured? It's going to be featured around who the new legends are for Diamond Dynasty. They're probably going to do something with commentary again this year. They're probably going to advance March to October a little bit, and then it's going to be Diamond Dynasty, Diamond Dynasty, Diamond Dynasty, and that's going to be it. So I think for me, because it's such an incremental upgrade year after year, and again, I know I'm picking on the show, but every other sports game, Madden, NHL, NBA, they're all kind of the same. The features that get me out of my chair excited are fewer and further between now than they have ever been. And I think that's not necessarily a all bad thing. I think some of these games have established themselves where they are really, really good products. MLB is a great game. NHL is a great game. NBA is a great game.
Great game.
Right. Madden to a certain extent is a good game. So they have, the core is there, but I just think for people like us who play these games year in, year out, it becomes harder to get excited.
I totally get the getting harder to get excited. I 100% get that. On the flip side, for a game that comes out every single year, what could you possibly do other than add a few incremental upgrades and fixes. And I'm, you know, we could go every single franchise, and I'm sure we could pull out long lists that the community has, right? But you know, for sports video games are the only games that come out every single year. Even your big AAA games like your Call of Duties, for example, you know, every version of those is built by a different studio that gets 2, 3, 4 years to build things like that, right? So while, you know, 20 years ago, because the amount of time that a particular game franchise had even existed and the technology that it was on, there was a lot of room to make big annual feature additions and to, you know, to come up with new and different things. But for games that are to a game already so deep, so complex, so well adjusted to whatever the rules are right now, Brian, I mean, is it even remotely realistic for anybody who makes an annual sports video game to be able to produce a feature list that will get people to, you know, as Chris said, to jump out of their seats with excitement? What could it possibly be other than, for example, NBA 2K reviving a beloved Jordan mode? You know what I mean? Like, there's just not that many opportunities to get people to jump out, because these are games that have been around for 15, 20, 25, 30 years that already have the game down, for lack of a better word. They've already got the game down to a T.
So, yeah, I think what you have to realize first is that it was a lot easier to make technological jumps a decade ago, 2 decades ago, whether it's between one game or one generation. There was the ability to surprise and the ability to innovate was so much more available to developers at that time. And it was not, you know, yes, obviously their intention was to make money, but they weren't building features based on money. They were building features to sell games. So they were building games in a way to make them the most attractive to people to buy them. Now they make games to make them the most attractive to people to spend money in them after buying them, right? It's just, it's a different approach. I don't think the potential is there to surprise consumers like you could in the past. Yes, there are features. I do think there are features they could come up with that would be intriguing. Maybe not in the same way it used to be in the past, sure. But what they have to do is really engage with their consumer base, with their biggest fans, which they don't do that anymore. You know, they'll pay Twitch streamers to stream about their game, talk up their game. They'll pay for advertising and all that, but they don't engage in a genuine way with people in order to find out what they want, in order to deliver on what they want or what they hope to see in the games anymore.
Brian, I can name somebody on this call right now who doesn't engage with their fans anymore, and his name rhymes with Shmasta Shmadre. Have you been out there on the internet, my friend? It's a leper colony. My God.
But Brian brings up a good point, right? Because that is a very – and again, we're going to get off topic a little bit, but – that whole engaging with your fans piece has become such a double-edged sword. As somebody who lived that for 4 years, it is such a rewarding thing when it goes well. But the problem is that it very rarely goes well. You look at what's happening to Madden. You look at the Fix MLB franchise movement. Listen, Rich, you said, like, most of these games are pretty fleshed out. If Sony San Diego put effort into franchise mode that isn't broken with roster issues and progression issues and basically unplayable after 2 or 3 seasons, that would get me out of my chair. If you told me I could play a franchise mode and it not be riddled with under the hood problems because they don't care about the mode, that would be great. But, you know, you see a lot of these movements take to social media, and we're getting to that time of year, right, where the MLB community is starting to get fired up. we're getting to be that time of the year where they start, you know, announcing cover athletes and start announcing the road to release. But, you know, you've seen these companies. Madden is a great example. I mean, they've all but withdrawn their interactions on social media because they almost exclusively go negatively. And that's the kind of risk reward, right? It's really hard to and again, my experience with it at OOTP, we're talking, you know, no slight to the OOTP community at all, but you're talking a fraction of the users that some of these AAA sports games have.
Yes.
But, you know, when we got, when we found ourselves in a situation where something was turning negatively, it snowballs out of control within minutes.
And now
minutes. you're left with two real options.
And it's good, and it's exhausting.
And your two options are, it's very simple to choose which one's the right one, is to withdraw and let it fizzle out on its own, or you keep trying to combat and interact with people, and then it just continues to go off the rails worse. So I think that's what makes it hard. I think we live in a social age, especially now in 2023, where it's almost impossible to have companies listen to the majority of their users. Brian alluded to companies using, you know, streamers and content creators. And that's a great strategy because it puts the onus on those creators. You set the parameters of, hey, here's what you're allowed to talk about. Here's what you get to showcase. Here's some talking points. Here's the what you can't talk about, what the no can do is. And then all the comments, all the feedback, all the interactions occur on those channels. It's out of sight, out of mind, right? It's interesting because I think that that sort of approach is really, really putting these sports gaming communities on the negative side of the scale. And unfortunately, I don't think that's something that's going to change anytime soon.
No, it's not going to change. I mean, we're talking about it because we're talking about sports video games. But if you're in any business out in the world, you know, especially video games, right? You know, if you're the community right. manager for, you know, for Destiny, you know, or for Halo, you know, it's not like everyone's treating you nicely and saying that, you know, that they think that you should remain gainfully employed, right? You know, and that they very yeah. much enjoy the product that you produce and you work 75 hours a week, you know, to get out there. But we are talking about sports video games, and that's exactly why it comes up. It's one of the most challenging things in the world is to try to manage an internet-based community when you're combining multiple things, including the internet and video games and money, right? It's just it's one of the most difficult things that there is to do.
Let me ask something, Rich.
Sure.
Of both of you, one of the things I was trying to get at there was this idea that the games now, more than in the past, they were more developer-driven, and now they're more executive-driven.
Well, as an executive, I can tell you that's not the case, because nobody listens to a word I say.
Yeah, as somebody who used to be one of Rich's subordinates, I can confirm we never listened to anything Rich ever said.
So, you know, maybe the other executives are better at it, but, you know, that's not happening with me.
Approving us to have money for X.
Well, yeah. So anyways, my thinking there is that, look, in the past, executives definitely made decisions. They nixed features, approved features, all of that in the past, too. We've known this from developers who have left teams like Madden and talked about their experiences on the game, development leads that have left these studios. But now it's not building features and creating those features for the game that are going to sell the game again. Like I was saying earlier, it's building monetization and finding the way to create the most out of what you can once people have already bought the games. This is just to me, when I look at the games, there's rarely anything exciting about them, you know, back of the box type stuff anymore. It's all, once you're in Ultimate Team, guess what new thing we have for you in there. It just, to me, it screams we're trying to make more money within the game than we are trying to actually sell you on the game.
All right. Well, I wildly disagree with almost everything you're saying, Brian, but that's okay. We are also joined by our good friend, and again, one of the OGs of the Press Row podcast from Polygon, the great Owen Gooden. Owen, how are you, my friend?
Sleepy. I tell you, Rich, I'm kind of, I mean, you know, I slept, this national championship game was so boring. Oof. It put me to sleep on the couch. Oof. Even though I set an alarm, I swear to God, I set an alarm on my phone.
You didn't miss anything. Brian and I have just been being negative for 20 minutes.
Well, just you know, killing my favorite thing.
I'm wondering if there are any other iPhone users out here who have had the same problem where it's like your phone is trying to guess what you're doing, and then it goes, "Oh, well, he's sleeping, so we're just not going to bother you." I set that alarm. I wanted to go off at full strength, damn it, and right. I can't tell you how many times this has failed me. So I don't know what setting I need to do. I apologize to you and to Brian. Good to be with you again, Brian, and to Chris. And anyway, I'm ready to talk. Well, I'm sorry.
No, it's actually a perfect time because we are transitioning from sort of why do we all feel a little bit differently about sports video games in 2023 to, hey, let's talk about what I am looking forward to most in 2023 in sports video games. Now, normally I either don't even say what my answer is or I go last. But for the one and only time tonight, I'm going to go first.
Okay.
And that's because, Owen, I'm pretty sure that this is at the top of your list as well.
So in the name of stealing Owen's thunder.
Yes.
Rich is going to go first.
Yes, and I'm announcing it, right? So that's the classy way to steal thunder is to say.
Right. I sleep through it all. Anyway, go ahead.
No, but Owen, I mean, and one, I'll tell you this. I'm going to take a 15 to 20 second aside. I don't know what year it was, Owen. I'm sure you will be able to tell me at some point, whether it's, you know, immediately or, you know, tomorrow. But at one point, Owen wrote an article for Kotaku about how the people who made the in-game version of Augusta National made it. And it was one of the most interesting pieces of video game writing I've ever read. And I know it's something that I don't know exactly where I was in my life in terms of whether Press Row Podcast was happening at that point. I don't think it was. I feel like that was either earlier in my video game life around the box score time, or maybe even before, but I know that that article had a big impact on me. And the reason I mention it is because, like, in the new golf game that's coming out from EA Sports, there's going to be a next gen or this generation version of Augusta National, as well as three other licensed properties that are going to be part of a golf game that is going to have all of the major championships licensed. And I assume some roster of real world golfers, that some of whom I will be able to point at and say, oh, I know who that person is, right? I'm not suggesting I'm going to play this game the most. I'm not suggesting I'm going to like it the most. But for a medium that we are talking about, which is video games and sports video games to be more specific, intersecting with a sport that is having one of the most incredibly fascinating reckonings with the fundamentals of how it's played and who plays it and where they play it and how much they get paid for it and what counts as something important than the sport of golf. And you're also intersecting that with, this is going to be the second licensed version of a game. We always lament on how most of our sports video games only have one version or none. Now you've got competition, right? It's a fascinating intersection of events, and for all of those reasons, I am most interested in and looking forward to the golf game coming from EA Owen, is that yours as well, or is there something different that you're looking forward to most in 2023, and why?
No, I would agree. I mean, simply because, you know, it's been a decade since we've seen a golf game from Electronic Arts, and that's not to besmirch the golf club / PGA Tour 2K, you know, a fine video game and one that a franchise that has made great strides in opening the door or just being a little bit more welcoming to a mass audience. So it's one of these things where, you know, I played Tiger Woods PGA Tour, God knows how many dozens of hours. And it's a very enjoyable, very understandable game. Sometimes it can be a little bit too easy, I understand. And I know that, PGA Tour 2K, 2022, 2023, is something that, you know, people who are big fans of golf enjoy the challenge that it can lay down. You have to get under the hood a little to, you know, modulate its challenge somewhat, and, you know, give yourself, you know, okay, I can, you know, I can use, I mean, things like your backswing and then of course your front swing, you know, on the analog stick. But, you know, EA Sports PGA Tour, if it's going to come out like anything that we remember from the Tiger Woods days, is, you know, I think it's going to be a monster. Golf in general is having a real moment in video games. It's not just with PGA Tour, with 2K Sports. I mean, you look at, you look at things like, obviously there's Everybody's Golf, which came out 5 years ago, but it has a huge mobile presence. You know, What the Golf, Golf Story, things like that. I mean, this is it's a sport that's almost made for video games. And the fact that EA Sports is coming back to it, you know, again, with Augusta National, which everybody thought was gone for good, because, you know, that club is so enigmatic, and they don't need anybody's money, and there's nothing you can do. There's no...
Well, you nailed it. They don't need anybody's money, and there is no reason for them to do this other than that somebody important really wants this to be done. That's the only reason.
Right. I mean, you have to be... I remember talking with a guy from EA Sports PR, and he said that the original deal with Augusta, he wasn't commenting on its terms or how much it was worth. I'm sure it was worth a lot. But it was one of the strangest things that ever came together in EA history. And I believe it because, you know, again, it's like, how do you convince people who don't need the money and don't need the exposure to come along to something? When Tiger Woods and EA broke up a decade ago, a lot of people, myself included, figured that was it because it seemed like Augusta came to video games because of its close relationship with Tiger Woods. Now it's okay. You know, they're back. And, you know, Tiger Woods is not with EA anymore. In fact, he's with 2K Sports.
He's the cover athlete of the competitor.
Exactly. So it's fascinating. I mean, there's a lot of inside baseball crap that goes with it. But I think it is a comeback that is as fascinating and as anticipated as anything that we're waiting for on college football, which I would have hoped would happen this year, but it's not. It sounds like that's because of other machinations that are going on within college football at large. When I think about those were three straight really good games. Now, you know, 13 was a little misunderstood. Some of that was because they had those courses that you could unlock, and it felt like you were renting them. And so it felt like a big microtransaction parade. And they didn't do a good job of communicating, you know, what the game was all about. But, you know, 12, 13, and 14 were landmark works of sports video games. And, you know, to have Augusta come back, and I mean, you know, this is because it is the major that is played at one course, the only major that is played at one course every year, in addition to being the most famous golf course in the world, in my opinion. How can you not be thrilled by the idea of this thing coming back home, especially, you know, on new hardware with all of the visual fidelity that it can present. Rory McIlroy PGA Tour was, you know, at launch, kind of a disappointing game. Post-launch support, decent. But, you know, so much of my enthusiasm and so much of other people's enthusiasm was cut off from that game because it did not have Augusta. And the courses are the real stars of any golf video game. I think any developer would tell you that. And EA has the biggest one, and it's coming out this spring. And so I agree with you. This is... so many words said in service of the same thing. I can't wait for EA Sports PGA Tour.
And I also can say that I have – oh, and you and I remember when the Golf Club first came out, which is, you know, the franchise upon which PGA Tour golf is built. I loved it. And I played every version of it. This is the only one I haven't played this year, and it's only because of I'm very well aware through our good friend Mark Foley, who is big in the PGA Tour world, as is like Crazy Canuck, 1985, I think I have him right. Like I am very well aware of that game, and Chris too, Jardine. You're in that world. It's a very complicated game, and I just don't personally at this time in my life have the patience and time to get good at PGA golf, PGA Tour right. golf. But I'm telling you, if this EA golf game wasn't coming out that had Augusta and the four championships in it, I probably would have picked it up at some point. But it's sort of this carrot dangling in front of me has kind of also kept me a little away from the incredibly demanding beast that is PGA Tour 2K, Chris Jardine.
Well, and I think it's safe to say, right, that, you know, there's still some time to go before we get the EA Sports PGA Tour game. But I think it's definitely going to have more arcade-like elements in it versus the basically brutal, unforgiving, PGA 2K. I think it creates a really interesting dynamic because you have not one, but two 2K properties this year that have gone competitionless for quite some time that are now going to face highly anticipated games. You have the EA Sports PGA Tour. You also have some competition on the wrestling front with AEW coming out with their own game later this year. Again, both, I think the similarities that AEW Fight Forever and EA Sports PGA Tour are going to have is both WWE 2K and PGA 2K are, you know, much like NBA 2K, are generally regarded as, you know, you have to really put the time in to get good at it. They have complex, overarching control systems. If you want to get the most out of the game, you really have to put in the time. Listen, I'm still somebody, I still have a couple of PGA societies that I play weekly. I mean, when you're having a bad day on the stick, you're having a bad day on the course. There's no, hey, you know, all arcade element to bring it back to reality. When you're playing bad, you're playing bad. But now you have the WWE and PGA that are going to have, you know, these games that I would bet a good amount of Canadian dollars are going to be have a little bit more arcade feel to them, and there is a lot of hype around them, and a lot of that has to do with the PGA launch was substandard. There was a lot of features missing. There was the whole debacle with the consumable golf balls. Yes, they have a roadmap of things they would like to add that should have been in there at launch, like ranked matchmaking and crossplay. And, you know, we know WWE has struggled in recent years. You know, the whole disaster with coming to this generation of consoles still very fresh in everybody's mind. So I think that's going to be an interesting dynamic this year. Can EA Sports PGA Tour and AEW Fight Forever, you know, build off of the hype that they have going for it right now? I'm definitely in on EA Sports PGA Tour. I can't wait till the 10-hour free trial hits Game Pass, you know, sometime this spring. And I'm keeping my eye on AEW Fight Forever as well, because I think both the golf and the wrestling space will benefit from some fresh competition.
So are either of those or any of those titles, Chris, your most personal, most anticipated of 2023, or do you have something different?
No, they're definitely not my most anticipated. Well, they were on my list. I think for me, the most anticipated game I have to look forward to this year is the next installment of Forza Motorsport. I took a very long break from the racing sphere.
Yes.
You know, I think I took a really, really long break from racing games. And, you know, it was shortly after I got my gaming PC, which was about 4 months before the new Series SX consoles came out. I had given Forza Horizon 4 a try. And I was like, okay, this game's kind of cool, you know, open world, lots of stuff to do. Forza Horizon 5 was my most played game of 2021 and 2022. And I think, again, right, I think the Forza series is on a good track. I think there is a lot of space for a new Forza Motorsport game. Obviously, again, with it, you know, being on Game Pass, that's going to, you know, increase the viability of people giving it a try. I mean, what do you have to lose other than the time it takes to download it? I'm very, very, very excited to see what they do with Forza Motorsport. I know the rumors are, you know, that we're going to get a Xbox developer showcase later this month. Rumors are that Forza is going to be included in that. So I'm really, really looking forward to it. You know, from a racing standpoint, again, you know, we've seen what Gran Turismo did. You know, I know the three of us talked about Gran Turismo a fair bit on the Sports Game of the Year podcast last week, 2 weeks ago. I've lost all meaning of time. But, yeah, I think that's probably, for me, is probably the number one. I do have a couple of honorable mentions. I'm interested to see what NHL does for the next step of their franchise mode. We know that, you know, they did the whole custom leagues thing this year, which is really cool. You know, we kind of talked about how the custom leagues thing got completely dwarfed by NBA 2K's My Eras. But I think if there was ever a franchise mode that would be sort of next in line for an era-based mode, I think NHL would be that one. And I think that would be super cool. Let me go back to 1984 and draft Mario Lemieux all over again and go through that, you know, the 80s and then the 90s. I think that would be an absolute blast. You know, so I think that's going to be one. And I think my other thing, you know, we talked about MLB The Show a lot. MLB The Show is on my anticipated list because I am both very optimistic and very concerned about the game. From a team standpoint, you know, Sony San Diego brought in a lot of new people late in 2022, a lot of people who were known in the community, you know, they've hired them on as employees. You know, so it seems like they're trying to bring in fresh blood, fresh ideas, people who were, quote unquote, community leaders. But you've already started to hear things about, well, because they're putting the game out on the Switch, that sort of limits the amount of advancement that they could do, and that this is going to be the last year for the Switch, so we're really not going to see a good MLB game until MLB The Show 24. Again, you know, assuming that the game continues to be on Game Pass, well, I have nothing to lose. I'll give it a try. I also bought it on Switch last year. But yeah, like I said, I'm cautiously optimistic that we're going to see the next phase of March to October and some little advancements here and there. I like some of the things they've done internally and some of the people that they brought into the team, But also at the same time, I'm worried that they're going to point to the Switch and they're going to double down on their hitting is working as intended spiel. But yeah, those are kind of my my things I'm looking forward to this year.
All right, Brian Wiedeye, what is at the top of your list of what you're personally anticipating the most? It has to be something where you're actually looking forward to it, right? Is it possible?
Yeah, there's a few.
Oh, good.
There's a few. There's Owen already covered EA's golf game. There are a couple games that are intriguing to me that may or may not release this year. There's the 2K NFL game, which is, we're going on over 3 years now since they announced that they got the license to do a non-sim game. Who knows if that'll be out this year. And then there's also a boxing game, Undisputed, which I haven't followed closely, but I know some people on the development team, and that looks pretty promising. I'm going to go way off the board, though, with my choice, and it's going to be the 2K Lego soccer game. This is the first of the Lego games that 2K is working on. We know they have plans to expand out. There's going to be a racing game, but the first one, there was some thought that it might be out in time for the World Cup, so I'm pretty confident it'll be out probably this summer. It's just it's from a developer, Sumo Digital, which has a pretty good track record with racing games and tennis games in the past, and they've also done more recent work on games like Little Big Planet. And so they have a pretty good track record. It's kind of interesting to me what could happen here. Lego has been wanting to get into sports video games for a long time. I've mentioned on the podcast before, there was almost development on a Madden Lego game a while back. And so the idea that we could have something a little different is what I'm looking for here out of this. Obviously, because it would, I don't think with a game that is targeted at a wider, more family audience that it would be heavily on lean heavily on monetization. I'm sure it will have some elements of that, but I think there's the potential there for something really fun. And we know, I know that people have dug up, there are Lego figures tied to this game that have been classified. So we know it's coming probably soon, probably this year. And the Lego figures have names. I don't know if it's going to be licensed, but a fictional name, which could, if it does have licensing, that could imply like a story type mode, which I think would be a lot of fun in a Lego sports game. So that just brings something totally different to the genre, something that's kind of been lacking for many years, and I don't really consider the NBA Playgrounds type of thing as filling that void. This is something that I think could do that, and has been sorely needed.
Love it, absolutely love it. Yeah, I am. I'm very very bullish on everything this year. I love March to October. You know, I'm a guy who on console video games, especially as I get older, and even less dexterous than I used to be, and I was never any good at video games ever. I like incremental updates and the ability to really customize the experience to my to how I want to play the game, which in the case of MLB The Show is with some challenge, but not an extraordinary challenge. And kudos to MLB The Show for giving me that. Like, you know, it's got to be really hard for someone like me to sort of be able to, with, you know, a few presses of a button to, like, okay, you know, the most of the games that I play in the show are realistic style games. I hit enough, but not too much. I pitch well, but, you know, I'm not no hitting anybody ever. You know, I'm not going 5 for 5 with 5 home runs, right? I'm having enough success enough of the time to enjoy myself, but not dominating or getting killed. But I love March to October in MLB The Show. Happy to play for 2 or 3 seasons when it comes out. I love, you know, the online leagues in Madden. I'm in multiple. And there's just something about playing every couple, 2 or 3 days, a game of Madden in a league where there's either 3 or 4 other people in it, or even in the 4-string league, you know, it's completely human. Every single team is a human. Brian. There's just something about that. Even though I never make the playoffs and never win anything more than a few games a year at most, it's just a mode that just I like and I continue to play. And with NBA 2K, you know, I have waxed rhapsodically about how much I love NBA 2K, my eras, right? They've got that mode. I'm sure it will exist in an even better fashion, although I can't, I'm sure there's bug lists out there, but I can't think of, you know, I'm playing it and I'm just regularly amazed at how I'm playing in that dump of a Continental Airlines arena. And it's got the Continental Airlines arena logo on it, you know, in 2001 in New Jersey. And it's got those ugly red seats that are half empty. Ugh, they have that place down so well. And there's no reason for them to spend all that time to get the Continental Airlines arena perfect. It's ridiculous. So NBA 2K, I know I'm going to thoroughly enjoy that. There's just, I have, and then on top of that, right, like you're going to have the new golf game, which will be fun to try out. You're going to have Forza Motorsport 8, right? Not Forza Horizon, Forza Motorsport 8, which I'm a big Forza Motorsport fan, have been for years, played every one. There's a lot. There's going to be a lot of good stuff happening this year. And I'm just, even though it is, the pool is diluted, right? And there's, you know, there's a lot more sort of commonality in terms of the conversations around these games than there used to be. There's still, for an old dude like me, they're still making them in ways that I can enjoy them. Thank goodness. Because, like, you know, there's a lot of opportunities for them not to do that. Go ahead, Chris.
I was just going to say, I think it, you know, to maintain our journalistic integrity, I also think we have to acknowledge that the loss of the FIFA license for the EA football game this year. You know, the EA will be putting out, I think it's just called EA Sports FC.
Yep.
I don't expect any major changes with the game. I know they've signed thousands of athletes and 700 clubs across 100 leagues. But, you know, I think there is, you know, this has been a partnership that's lasted, you know, three decades. And it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, obviously, again, I don't think the game will be changed very much other than you're going to be missing the FIFA logo. And, you know, when the World Cup comes around, well, we'll have to see what happens there. But, you know, I think that's a lot of people don't like change. That's a, you know, after 30 years of being able to pick up FIFA and then insert the last two digits of the year here, it's definitely going to be a adjustment period for that one.
No doubt.
If I can jump in here with regard to FIFA, I mean, we're in a Women's World Cup year. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see, you know, exactly what that means to this game. Yet, obviously, you're not going to have that branding. You won't have that tournament. But then again, and, you know, unfortunately, sad to say, you know, the women's game has really, you know, taken a second seat next to the larger FIFA game. But Electronic Arts has gotten almost no value for its whatever it's paying for the FIFA name. The real value has been in all of the other licensing that goes into this game. You know, the English Premier League, Serie A, you know, all of the players, and, you know, FIFA Pro is their group license for global soccer. That does not change. They still have that. I don't expect anything different from the formerly known FIFA this September, other than a change of name on the box. It was like NCAA football in that, you know, the name that was on the box really just didn't matter at all. I feel like that is, you know, it's obviously it would have been different in a men's World Cup year. You know, we just had an exciting tournament. All eyes were on it. Everybody, you know, was focused to that biggest sport in the world. I don't see how EA loses anything by, you know, finally saying thank you, so long, goodbye to FIFA, which, you know, let's not mince words. That's a very hated organization worldwide. You know, now people don't have to look at it when they put a video game in their console.
You know, it's amazing. If this happened 10 years ago or 15 years ago, it would be completely different. Is there a better time than 2023 for, you know, a major sports video game to rename itself? Because, you know, the old adage of, well, grandma walks into the GameStop and she says, you got one of them FIFAs, right? Like, nobody buys games at stores anymore, right? Everyone gets them digitally, right? So your ability to mitigate that, you know, for you can dismiss, and you're I'm not saying you're wrong, you can dismiss, you know, the impact of the name change, but, you know, FIFA is 20 plus year brand, but it's so much better they're doing it now, Brian, when everybody just downloads everything digitally, than, again, you know, the, like, you know, maybe the 4 or the 5 year old, but even that, right? Like most I would imagine now, you know, if you look at the charts in the grass, right, most video game purchases are now direct digital downloads or subscriptions anyway. So, boy, it sure is a better time to change the name now than, say, 10 or 15 years ago, I would think.
Yeah, you know, EA was just a decade ahead of where they needed to be changing NBA Live to NBA Elite. They could have do it now, and they could they could win the battle of NBA basketball games, Rich. This was their opportunity. They had to wait one more decade to switch NBA Live over. Just didn't work out that way. Yes, I agree. I do think there is still a branding consideration there, as far as, you know, everybody. You know, most people aren't going to realize this is the name has changed even until shortly before release, right, or at release, right, when they're searching
when
for
they
it.
See
they're
going to make commercials it easy. And like, what the heck is that?
Yeah, they're going to make it easy. They're going to make it easy to find. You search FIFA in the Xbox store, it's going to pop up the EA game. You know, it's but yeah, you know, they'll be able to get away with it. It's all done digitally anyway, for the most part now, and people will be doing their trial in EA Access or in Xbox Game Pass, and yeah, you know, it is the right time to roll it over now. And Owen mentioned, you know, FIFA's own reputation, and so, you know, shedding that for EA might be a good thing also. 15, 20 years ago, losing the FIFA name would have mattered, just like 10 years ago, losing NCAA off of a college football game was actually kind of a significant thing, even though that was too just a branding thing. So, yeah, they'll do just fine with it now.
All right, let's close it out, going around the horn real quick. Anything you're interested in sports video game-wise in 2023 that we haven't talked about or haven't mentioned? We'll start with you, Owen.
Well, I mean, obviously, I'm interested to see what NBA, what Visual Concepts does, you know, coming back from, you know, a landmark work like NBA 2K23. I mean, obviously, you know, that thing is a machine, and they've got the whole online component, and it's microtransacted to hell. And yes, a lot of the effort and a lot of the attention and the drive, you know, goes into that component of the game. But, you know, they did give you eras, and it's like when we got the Jordan challenge in 2K11, and then they came back with, you know, my NBA in 2K12, you know, those were the days when I was like, how are they going to outdo themselves now? And in 2K13, they actually got the Dream Team back together, including Charles Barkley, and that took, you know, Jay-Z himself moving heaven and earth on their behalf. I mean, you know, those were some really interesting days. And, you know, I think, you know, given the iterative nature of NBA 2K and just, you know, knowing over the years, you know, the dedication to, you know, putting more stuff in, I think, you know, I've got my eye on NBA 2K24 because, you know, I think they know that they've got it. They got to put out another game. They know that they've got to, you know, beat whatever was, you know, the expectation in last year's game. And good Lord, did last year's game, you know, deliver a lot. And I think that they might have a few cards up their sleeve there. And you know, don't miss out on them. And, right. But yeah, the other stuff, you know, Chris mentioned AEW versus the WWE, game. Obviously, you know, it's great to have Yuke's back in this. And you know, there's a lot of interesting things that are going on there, but you know, as far as the known quantities that we have coming back, I think NBA, you know, 2K24 is going to be something where it's like those people still feel pressure yeah. to set standard.
Yeah. That to me, again, like NBA 2K, as a guy who's, it was my game of the year last year, they're just like a really great band that knows exactly what they're doing and how to do it. This is going to sound a little, you know, probably a little silly, but I saw the Foo Fighters in near my hometown 4 years ago, and I think the summer of 2018. And as a guy who's seen the Foo Fighters like seven times, they were always good. But this particular show, they were just perfect. They were just, you know, they had sort of been through the wars. They had figured it all out and were just executing at a extraordinarily high level, right? And you know, all right, rest in peace, the great Taylor Hawkins, because just a couple, 2 or 3 years later is when he passed away. But I just remember walking away from that concert just thinking that was it. That was, and it wasn't, you know, so well executed in a sanitary or sterile way. Like it was just, they were just, you know, at the height of their powers, so to speak. And I kind of feel like that's what NBA 2K is. They are just absolutely positively operating at a high level. They know what they're doing. They know what they want to do. They have strong leadership. They have a strong and powerful roadmap. They have clear identified goals that everyone on the team is executing to and marching towards. Like, I just, if there's any safer bet, then NBA 2K24 is going to be amazing. I'd like to see it because it's going to be. All right, Chris Jardine, your final sort of thoughts, anything you wanted to make sure we got in, you're looking forward to, or you're thinking about in 2023 in the world of sports video games?
Yeah, I'm interested to see if the Madden team can execute any changes to Ultimate Team without absolutely botching the game. So far, they're 0-4 in 2023. But no, in all reality, one thing I'm interested to see trending wise is, are any card collecting modes able to close the gap with Diamond Dynasty? You know, we talked a lot in the year in review show about how Diamond Dynasty, from a accessibility standpoint, from a balancing money versus time standpoint, is just head and shoulders above every other card collecting mode. I'm really interested to see if any, you know, if NBA My Team, if Madden Ultimate Team, if Football Ultimate Team, if Hockey Ultimate Team, any of those modes can start closing that gap a little bit. I think Madden is probably the closest one in terms of rewarding time that you spend doing challenges and just playing the mode without spending money. But it's still very, I mean, during their massive server outages over the holidays, they dropped a $130 bundle in the store. So, that's going to be an underlying thing for me. Can some of these other sports games start to close that gap on Diamond Dynasty, or will it just be another year of card collecting modes being Diamond Dynasty and then everything else?
Brian, we'd I take us home. Anything else you're thinking about looking forward to, interested in sports video games 2023?
Well, I'm going to be interested to see how games, specifically the show and Madden, how they respond to what was, you know, as far as whether it's a minority or not, the most vocal fans, the most vocal critics of the games this year, and really in recent years, whether they are going to react to that response. Things like Madden really struggling with its post-release support and losing franchises and struggling with Ultimate Team, or MLB The Show not advancing in certain areas and also having its share of technical issues. Are they going to do anything about that, or are they just going to ignore it and continue down the path they've carved out for themselves in recent years? That's really what I'm watching this year, other than going back to what I was looking forward to, which is maybe an influx of new blood in the genre, even if they're not competing with these legacy licensed games.
Very good. So one thing we know, there'll be more Press Row podcasts in 2023. Some of them will look and feel the same. Some of them will look and feel a little different. Who knows? But it's going to be a lot of fun. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We will be doing this again real soon. Before we go, Owen Good, where can people listen, see, hear, and watch everything that you're doing out there on the internet, my friend?
As always, I'm on Polygon.com, where you can just look for my name, but also look for all of my colleagues' great works across sports and other video games and anime and pop culture. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I am, yes, actually, DudeManBestBro1.
It's my favorite. I love it. So good. Chris Jardine, a.k.a. Snaggle J, where can people listen, see, hear, and watch what everything you're doing on the internet, my man?
Yeah, everywhere on the internet at Snaggle J, Twitter, YouTube, Twitch, all those places. I will plug one other one. Wednesdays at 11 a.m., you can hear me on my local radio station, 99.3 The River, doing a weekly ad read for my local SPCA. So if you really need that 90-second burst of me every Wednesday, you can listen to it online, 99.3theriver.com. But yeah, everywhere on the internet, at Snaggle J, as always.
There's like seven things about that I love, especially the animals. Because
I decided, part of my new year, new me, is I'm going to throw quirky things just randomly into conversations. And that's your nugget for this week.
And hey, you're helping the little furry guys, so that's good. I love that. All right, Brian Weedeye, Pasta Padre, do you exist anymore? Are you actually out there?
I am. I'm still on Twitter as long as that that remains functional. Pasta Padre there, but also Mastodon, Post, all sorts, anywhere that an account might be found. But also, I should mention I think we probably still do need one or two more people for our Madden League, Rich.
Okay. Yeah.
So yeah, if you're interested in participating in our Madden League, we're on Xbox this year. Hopefully with this next Madden, it'll be cross-platform and we won't have to specify that anymore. It'll make it actually a lot easier to sustain a 32-person league. But yeah, you can hit me up for that on application on Twitter. There's also a fourth string Twitter of its own with the application information and stuff. Yeah, we're having a good time, Rich. Even though you've been struggling, I've started to turn my team around this season. So,
well, I beat the Washington Commanders last night. I'm 2-4.
Yeah, and that was your team that was, I think, 4-1. So you were, in typical Rich fashion, back when you used to tweet and watch Eagles games at the same time, you would tweet about how the game was over and it was like three drives into the game, right? And you're doing that, continuing to do that in our Discord for the fourth string where you were calling for an 0-17 season.
The road to 0-17.
It was like after the first game you said, mm-hmm. on my way to 0-17, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm. I have gone 0-17. It's not unprecedented, okay? It's not like that hasn't happened. That's all I'm saying. But I'm 2-4 now, and I'm feeling very good about that. So
the two sides of you, Rich, the optimistic podcaster mm-hmm. and the pessimistic sports fan, is very, very odd to me.
Because look at the teams for which I root. Okay, that's all you need to know. My baseball team hasn't won a championship in over 35 years. Owen, don't say it. Don't say it. Okay, my football team finally, after 30 plus years of not winning, it finally won one Super Bowl, thank God, right? But again, the history of the Philadelphia Eagles, there's an extraordinary amount of failure compared to that incredible, wonderful success. My hockey team, yes, three Stanley Cups. I'll never forget it. It's beautiful. But I think my brother-in-law, we were sitting around at Christmas time, we were sort of calculating, like, of our favorite sports, right? And in my case, it's football, hockey, and baseball. Right. What percentage of the seasons that we have watched of our favorite teams played have they won an actual championship? And the math was incredibly, it's like, you know, less than 1/100th of a percent, something insane. Right. And you start to think, well, what the heck am I doing? But on the flip side, that's what makes it so nice when they actually do win.
Yep.
The only reason I'm saying all of that, Brian, is because if you, you know, I'm not a Yankees fan, not a Laker fan, right? Mm. Not a Patriots fan, right?
Or Tampa sports fan.
My teams don't win championships. And when you're in your 20s and your team don't win championships, it's very different than if you're, you know, north of 48. All right? You got me angry, Brian. You got me angry. You did it. Congratulations.
That's how I like to close out the show.
I got to step in here. I mean, you guys, you guys want to talk about suffering. I am a 1995 graduate of North Carolina State University. My school has not won an Atlantic Coast Conference championship in men's basketball since 1987 or in football since 1979. Oh. And I am just waiting for the day, like you, like all of you.
Right.
And I, frankly, I don't know if that train is ever coming. It just, you know, it every year it kills me. It really does. It really does.
Yeah, I believe
it's very demoralizing. It is extraordinarily demoralizing. You know, that is the only team and school that I really, really, really care about in terms of, like, you know, it makes me sad when they don't win. You know, the others are sort of vicarious, but that is where I went to school, and we haven't done crap. I mean, shit, the baseball team, you know, with, you know, what happened in the goddamn College World Series in 2021. It's just a perfect example. I mean, we need some hardware at NC State. We need some hardware in Raleigh, and we need that more than any other team, any other fan base, really, I think, in America.
Amen. I think we all know something, Chris Jardine, about having extraordinary dedication to professional sports franchises that don't win championships very often or ever.
Well, listen, I mean, you know, I don't know what you're talking about, man. My team's won an NBA championship the last couple of years. I got a Stanley Cup in the last 5 years. We won't talk about the Bills just because. And, you know, it has been 30 years since we won a World Series. But listen, you know what? I think it's Owen made a pretty compelling case why we should all be rooting for the Wolfpack. So, you know, I'm going to jump on lids.ca after this and get myself an NC State Wolfpack hat immediately.
Nice.
Maybe a little bit of some north of the border support. You know, listen, here's the thing, Rich. You said you went negative, but doesn't matter how our sports teams are doing in real life, because we can always be exponentially more successful with them in the virtual world.
Amen, brother. Amen. Well done. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We will continue to do new shows all through 2023. So be on the lookout. All sorts of great stuff coming down the pike. For Chris Jardine, for Owen Good, for Brian Weedye, thank you so very much for being here. We'll talk to you again real soon.